Hello and welcome back to Serie A Spotlight. We're your hosts, Jay
and Matt.
You know what time it is!
I can't tell you guys enough how much you've been my internal monologue when thinking about football for the last year.
Yes, amazing!
We get to record while drinking some wine.
Jake and I will have a very special soft spot for Salah. Yeah,
we love him.
Stop zooming in on Allegri's face, boy. You're gonna make
How
me
are you
break.
Exposing me?
Because you're gonna make me break. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Serie A Spotlight. This is episode number 157 and I am your host, Matt. Jake isn't here today. He's completely abandoned me. He is out getting his prosthetic penis done after seeing the work that Juan Bernabe got done. Of course, that's not the truth. The truth is that he has a head cold. I've never heard of a head cold before, but whatever it is, Emerson Royal certainly has it. But let's talk about this thing about Juan Bernabe and his prosthetic penis. I'm sure I'm not telling you anything new. I'm sure most of you know about this because it's made international headlines. Even New Zealand know about this and posted about this online. Basically, Lazio have their mascot, and their mascot is an actual eagle. Obviously, Lazio are the eagles. The eagle flies around the Stadio Olimpico at the end of games as well. So it's very iconic. Of course, this eagle needs a falconer. That falconer is Juan Bernabe, and it has been for years. He's a loyal servant of the club. He had once faced a ban from the club for doing a Nazi salute during a win of Lazio. He was only banned momentarily, however, and they have showed their loyalty throughout. There was a final straw, though, as Juan Bernabe got a prosthetic penis done. This apparently happened because he had an accident a couple of years ago, the poor guy. And he finally got this prosthetic penis done that he was obviously very, very happy with. I would be too. Because, as patron Dave said, it's great craftsmanship. I'm a straight guy, but it's a good-looking dick. Let's put it as it is. So he posted images and videos of his new prosthetic penis online, which obviously, I mean, censorship. Like, be careful, bro. Like, I know you're happy with it, but not everyone needs to see it. You could maybe write a status. Just got my new dick. It's amazing. I love it. It's this big. Fantastic. 10 out of 10 would recommend. But no, that wasn't the case. Well, that's for if anyone missed it, if anyone's living under a rock, at least now you know. Apparently, he isn't accepting to leave, so he's barricaded himself inside, I believe, the training ground or the headquarters of Lazio. I'm not too sure where that is. So yeah, if you didn't know, well, now you know. Jake and I, of course, discussed our goal of the week as well, and we decided to give it to Kenan Yildiz for his goal in the Derby della Mole. Fantastic goal by the 19-year-old, superb goal. He loves a goal in the Derby della Mole, and at the moment, he is that guy for Juve. Juve are struggling offensively. Of course, Vlahovic isn't performing well. Conceição is out injured. Nico Gonzalez is still coming into the squad. But they can rely on this 19-year-old Turkish wonder boy. He is a star. He's already a star. He's not even a star in the making at this point. Some more consistency would be excellent, but he's absolutely carrying this Juve team at the moment. That is our goal of the week. In that same game, in the Derby della Mole, Vlasic scored an absolute banger. It was a half volley after some great work by Karamo, half volley by Vlasic from the edge of the area that left the goalkeeper rooted to the spot and went in off the post. Anguissa had a breathtaking strike as well, and Krstović had two bangers as well as Lecce cruised past Empoli, surprisingly. Two fantastic goals just reminding us what Krstović can be capable of, and that sometimes it's good to be selfish when you can do things like that. Unfortunately, that's only 10% of the time that he's capable of doing that. So perhaps still pass the ball, Krstović. I would definitely recommend. So these goals of the week are pertaining to match day 20. Match day 19 also took place, which is why we're recording this episode on a Thursday. And by we, obviously, I mean I, because Jake has abandoned ship. So, of course, there were some great goals scored in the... There was the Inter-Bologna game that was played. There was Milan against Como. And there was also... My mind's obviously failing me, of course. Juve-Atalanta, where Retegi scored an incredible header. And I think it really is an underrated goal on Retegi's return. I was looking at him before he even received the ball and just seeing his movement in the box and... It's no doubt that he is such a dangerous striker, but what makes him dangerous, it is his poaching ability, man. I mean, it took Savona just a split second to adjust his body to get rid of that ball, but in that split second, he was going in brave with a flying header, and just the way he struck it, it was unstoppable for Di Gregorio, just a fantastic goal, which deserves a shout out as well. If any of you are new here, do make sure to follow us on our socials. So Instagram, TikTok and Twitter, that is at Serie A Spotlight. Subscribe to us on YouTube. Of course, it's the same handle, Serie A Spotlight. And rate us 5 stars wherever you get your podcast, be it Spotify, Apple or any of these platforms I don't know about, but we post on every single one. Drop us a 5-star rating over there and give us a follow. Turn your notifications on. You'll know when we post. Our episodes aren't boring, I promise, unless I'm alone. Then in that case, it might be a little bit boring. And if you love us so much and you're like, I want to see these guys 2-3 times a week. I want them to make money from the podcast. I want them to go full time on this. $3.99 a month. Patreon. We have a beautiful set of patrons. We've got a fantasy league with them. In fact, I recommend you join this season, get you know, good at fantasy so that next year you could kick all our asses. And you also get added to the littest group chat in Serie A history with some of my favorite people in the world. This is a shout out to our beautiful patrons. I love you all so much. And also, we've got 2 new patrons. Cue the techno music. Jake isn't here, so we don't have our soundboard, unfortunately. Skint Jumper and Giordano, welcome to the family. I know that one of you isn't in the group chat yet, and we've requested your contact details to add you to the group chat. So I'm telling you right now, if you're listening to this as a patron, I'm sure you are. Send us your details, man. Let's get you in there and let's have a good time. But what are we going to be discussing in this episode? Why is it late? So, of course, match day 20 took place. So I'll take you through all the happenings of match day 20. The match day 19 games took place as well. The fixtures, which I mentioned earlier, and I won't attempt to remember them again. We'll go through those as well. And then, of course, there's massive news when it comes to the transfer market. Some bigger moves than we would have ever anticipated that would be taking place in January. We haven't seen anything like it since Vlahovic's move to Juventus that took place in January. So there's a lot and a lot to talk about over there. What are the headlines? What are the main talking points going to be? Of course, Kvaratskhelia is leaving Napoli. Again, I'll get into more information about these moving forward. These are just the headlines. Kvara is set to leave Napoli for PSG for around 75 to 80 million. It's been rumored that Garnacho is a potential replacement. Now, every single time I've watched Garnacho play, I've liked him. So I really do hope that Napoli get their hands on him. But of course, there are other rumors. There's Rashford, there's Chiesa, there's Werner. That doesn't exactly fit that position. But sure, in this episode, I'm going to talk about how that came to be, this move of Kvaratskhelia. Was it out of the blue? Is it true that Napoli didn't offer him a contract? Is it true that ADL was lowballing him? We'll get into that very, very soon. Frattesi wants out of Inter. Of course, this is not a move that's going to happen in January, for sure. Roma are interested in him. Of course, Frattesi is... I'm not sure if he's a Roman, but we've definitely seen him in a Roma kit before. He adores Roma. He was close to joining Roma in the past as well. But Inter have set their price tag. They've told Roma, look, if you want him, it's 45 million. I believe they even went so far as to tell Napoli, Atalanta, Milan and Juve, but if you guys want him, then it's over 50 million. So essentially, what are Inter trying to say here? It's if you want him, pay up. and you'll get him. Of course, a young talent, with all the injuries that Inter have, he's still not making the squad, which is a real shame for the Nazionale, because he always performs so well for Italy. We need him to be in tip-top form, so a move away where he could get some solid minutes would be beneficial. Napoli have taken a big step in the title race. That is because now Inter only have one game in hand, and if they win that game, then they are level on points with Napoli, who are only playing once a week. Remember that, it is an absolute key factor. Inter are still in all competitions, so it's a huge, huge plus for Napoli. What happens if they end the season on the same point? Some of us might forget, but there was a new law, so to say, in 2022 or 2023, I can't quite remember, that says it's not goal difference, it's not direct encounter, it's a fucking final in a neutral stadium. So that would be incredible if Napoli and Inter could finish level on points. Of course, I'm not discounting Atalanta. But if that were to happen, what an exciting game that would be. The final of the Serie A. It's bigger than the Coppa. It's bigger than the Super Cup. It's so, so exciting. It's also bigger, I guess, than the Club World Cup. That's something I want to discuss, but I really want Jake to be here to discuss this FIFA Club World Cup, which Inter are going to be part of, actually. Bocchetti has his first win in Serie A, and it's Monza's second win. And this came against Paladino, who was, of course, Monza's manager last season, so he might have done them a favor over there. Fiorentina's downfall must be studied, but it's less about Fiorentina's downfall and more about Galliani's message for Monza and to Monza and on behalf of Monza, where he said, if you guys think we can't do this, if you don't think we could get 25 points or whatever he said in the second half of the season, leave right now. I don't want you anywhere near the club. And that was a big ball statement by Galliani. He's really shown confidence. He's created this element of togetherness, this element of grinta. And the first thing they've done is go out and beat Fiorentina. And I mean, they were 2-0 up against Fiorentina. Churia scored his first goal. He hadn't scored a single goal last season. Maldini scored. We're talking about how he's flopping after that amazing start, where he's called up to the Nazionale and all this and all that. And then Fiorentina got one back through a penalty by Beltran, who came on for Goodmanson. Massive, massive win for Monza as they now go up to 13 points. Of course, still in last place, but 1 point now behind Venezia. Juve are also on course, so match day 19 and match day 20, you guessed it, 2 draws for Juventus. So Juve now have 13 draws this season, the record for the most amount of draws in a single season in Serie A. You'll remember this if you're a listener that started listening last season. Last year, Udinese broke the record with 19 draws in an entire season. Juve are definitely, definitely on course to break that, because they still have half the season left and they're certainly going to draw more games at this rate, because it just seems like Juve are scoring goals and then just letting the other team concede. Before they had that whole shut up shop thing, Corto Muso, so on and so forth. It's not quite the idea that Motta has, it's just that it hasn't fucking quite worked yet for Juventus. Theo Hernandez has broken Paolo Maldini's record for the most goals scored by a Milan defender, and he got given this golden teddy bear that wears a Milan kit, which is, I mean, pretty sick, I guess. To be fair, I'd like one of those. But he scored 30 goals. Maldini had 29 goals, of course, in way, way, way more appearances. Some interesting names on this list, likes of Kaladze, Serginho. Interesting statistic over there. It's quite obscure to have a reward for the highest scoring defender in a club's history, but very, very valid when you break a Paolo Maldini record. So it's absolutely, absolutely relevant. So I'm just going to have a sip of coffee, if you don't mind. I hope you guys are enjoying a coffee or something naughty while listening to this. Let's get into match day 20. In Serie A. Lazio against Como. They drew 1-1 on Lazio's 125th anniversary. Diaz scored an amazing goal. Any top striker would be proud of the goal that he scored after the Guendouzi assist. He moved well to beat the last defender and then slotted it nicely into the far corner. But then Lazio went down to 10 men after Chauna's red card. This is Lazio's second red card in as many games after, of course, they got a red card in the derby against Roma. Como then equalized through a Cutrone header from a Strefezza cross. Lazio kept on pushing to win the game. Guendouzi got close from close range and they missed a couple more chances, but that was pretty much it. Como, one thing that they have done for the entire season, whilst they're obviously, they'd be hoping to be in a better position at this point, is they're always in the game. Apart from earlier on in the season where they were getting killed, they're not really getting killed anymore. And we're seeing a lot of tactical discipline. Even in the match day 19 game against Milan, they scored the first goal of the game in the 60th minute, and it really looked like they were going to get away with something until obviously Leao turned up the heat over there. But Como are definitely, definitely getting better. And I think in a few match days' time, maybe in 5 to 6 match days, I don't think we'll be considering them as contenders for relegation at all. I think they'll get out of that phase. They've definitely got quality players. They've brought in a couple of bad boys as well. In fact, they brought in, his name escapes me, but I have it in my notes for later on. They have the youngest foreign goal scorer in Como's history, who scored against Milan, 19-year-old. So that is absolutely amazing. Yes, I think Como will definitely improve. Lazio have really been struggling since the 6-0 loss to Inter. And remember, before that, they were doing great things. They were on a hot streak like Atalanta. We were speaking about Lazio and Atalanta in the same vein, pretty much. But after the 6-0 loss to Lazio, they scraped past Lecce 2-1. Lecce had a red card and they scored in the final moments. They drew to Atalanta, which, to be fair, is fine. Then they lost the Derby della Capitale 2-0 to Roma. And then they drew 1-1 to Como. And in both of those games, as I mentioned earlier, they did get a red card. So maybe they're getting pissed off. They're getting frustrated. They are looking to make some moves in the market. And they definitely need a central midfielder and a center back. But it doesn't seem like those are the profiles that they're quite going for yet. Again, more information to come later. Lecce secured a massive 3-1 victory against Empoli at the Castellani Stadium, drawing level with them at 20 points in the table. The visitors dominated the early stages, scoring twice in the first 11 minutes through Morente and Kristovic, although Cacace got one back early in the second half for Empoli to revive their hopes. Lecce maintained control and sealed the win with Kristovic's second goal in stoppage time. The victory ended Lecce's poor run of form while deepening Empoli's more recent struggles, as they have just earned 1 point in their last 5 matches. Lecce absolutely overwhelmed them in the opening 15 to 20 minutes of the game. They were playing super direct vertical football. It wasn't counter-attacking, but they were counter-attacking. It's not like they were absorbing pressure much. They just absolutely went out there and they shocked Empoli with their direct approach. Empoli must have been thinking Lecce would be happy with a point, or maybe they're going to try to scrape a victory. But the way they went out there, it's like they were trying to kill Empoli. I mean, Empoli have one of the best defenses this season. Let's be honest, even though they're not a top team, the statistics don't lie. They have a fantastic defense. Ismaili has been incredible. But they've also been opportunistic, like the quick throw-in that led to the second goal as well. Empoli thought they could get back into it as they scored early in the second half, and then they looked like they were the team that were obviously looking to equalize, and Lecce seemed to adapt to that, say, okay, let's sit back a bit and be a bit more defensive. But then another banger by Kristovic, man, just 2 excellent fucking goals by Kristovic. Is Kristovic back, is the question. Last year he peaked super early and then he dipped. This time he started super slow, and now he's looking a little bit better. He's looking way better, to be honest. Maybe a new lease of life under Gianpaolo. Definitely Gianpaolo has done great things to Tete Morente, because he's been his jolly. He's been playing brilliantly. And Lecce just overall look much, much better. So the relegation battle is really, really going to be an interesting one. There was Udinese 0, Atalanta 0 as well. Quite a shock result over there for Atalanta. Udinese came close to even scoring in the second half through Alexis Sanchez, who hit the post twice. Low key, it was hilarious. He hit the post the first time. I was like, wow, what a worthy, amazing strike. What a great piece of work by him. But he really should have scored the follow-up. And then I think Atalanta must be feeling blessed that they got away with a point in this game. I mean, Atalanta dominated possession, but they struggled to break down Udinese's defense. Again, Udinese have been way, way, way more organized this year. Of course, they're a formidable team, Atalanta against Udinese. I do believe there's a statistic that they are the two biggest teams in Serie A. Of course, I'm talking about player height. And of course, that plays an absolute factor in football. Of course, it does. Udinese, however, failed to take their chances and will be disappointed with a draw against Atalanta. Who would have thought? On that statistic about Udinese, no, it's not just because Luca is like 6'7". They do have very tall players in that team. Of course, this dampened Atalanta's hopes. Two draws in a row. I believe three draws in a row, actually. Now, correct me if I'm wrong, as they took a bit of a hit. But now they have Retegi back and hopefully they could get back to winning ways. The Derby della Mole, Torino against Juve. It ended 1-1, obviously a draw for Juve. After Yildiz put Juve ahead with a brilliant solo effort, just beats two guys and then goes low and hard into the near post of Vanya Milinkovic-Savic. And it's no joke even attempting a strike against the formidable Vanya Milinkovic-Savic. But brilliant work again there by the Turkish 19-year-old. If you want to hear me praise him, just go back earlier in the episode and you'll hear all about that. Vlasic responded with a brilliant strike as well. And then that was it. I mean, both of them fought hard. It was a derby. Both the managers got sent off for arguing with each other. Shades of Conte and Tuchel. Of course, it was Chelsea against Spurs. The key moments in this game came in midfield, but it was competitive throughout, as you would expect in a derby. But Juve have had Torino's number for the past multiple seasons. I can't remember the last time Torino got anything out of a game like this. We also saw great leadership qualities from Ricci, who has been linked to Milan, which means he won't be joining Milan, because when Milan get linked to someone in January, try to close an early contract, they absolutely get swept up by someone else who just offers a little bit more money. So it's sad that Ricci won't be joining Milan. But up against certain players that are of certain quality at Juventus, Ricci held his ground very well. Even the things that impress me in a youngster is the way he approaches the referee, the way he sticks up for his teammates. He's way, way, way beyond his years. He's not just a press-resistant, good number six, hard-working, good on set pieces. He also has certain leadership qualities that is going to make him a massively great football player, especially for the Azzurri in the future. I'm very confident about that. Milan against Cagliari. That is now two draws for Milan against Cagliari this season. Morata opened the scoring for Milan, but Cagliari equalized through who other than Zortea against Milan. Zortea, not only against Milan, man, what a fucking talent. Jake and I have been saying this for years about Zortea. He had, and not to criticize Milan players, because I'm going to praise them later on as well, but he had Theo Hernandez and Leao's number for the entire game, just outworking them, outpacing them, outsmarting them. He was absolutely brilliant, Zortea. And then he got a goal. Of course, the goal went straight through Manyan. Manyan made an incredible save in the first half. His reflexes, I mean, Manyan is an incredible goalkeeper. He pulls off some saves that are unbelievable. That save on Harry Kane in the Champions League. Harry Kane! that save against Harry Kane in the Champions League. I can't remember if it was the round of 16 or the quarters. I think it was the round of 16, yes. But yes, and then the strike from Zortea, I mean, he was so slow to get down. It went straight through his hands. The ball was rolling in over there. I mean, you have to criticize the goalkeeper, who has a crucial position. I know it's harsh on goalkeepers. If they make a mistake, it's a goal. If a striker makes a mistake or a midfielder makes a mistake, it's not that detrimental. But I mean, it is a responsibility. He's wearing the armband and you don't want to see goalkeepers making these mistakes. Again, fantastic goalkeeper. Just I've really been seeing certain errors from him in recent history. You can't fault his leadership qualities and what he does for the team, however. Both teams had opportunities to win this game, but it was Manyan's opposite, Caprile, who made his debut in this game after they swapped out They swapped out Scoffè to Napoli and they brought in Caprile. And in his debut, he had barely landed, man, in Sardinia. And I think he would have just gone straight to Milan, to be fair. What a performance by Caprile. Just save after save after save. Now you tell me, okay, a lot of these shots were quite central, but sometimes this is what pisses me off. When people say, ah, oh, but it was central. Bro, a goalkeeper's positioning is so fucking important in football. And Caprile, I can't believe Napoli let him go, because in my opinion, he's better than Meret. Meret is super error prone. He's the most overrated keeper in Serie A. And I can't believe Napoli have stuck with him for so long. Of course, he's young and he's very, very young for a goalkeeper as well. But no, fuck him. There are way better goalkeepers. A particular player that I was very impressed by in Cagliari's colours was Matteo Felici, who they signed from Feril Pesaro, from Serie C, man. Well, he was in Serie B with Feril Pesaro, and he got relegated to Serie C with them. And Cagliari picked him up. And I'll tell you what, man, he is silky, he's hardworking, he's very attacking-minded, he's quick. I really, really liked what I saw from him, so keep an eye on him. Nescafe Gold Blend, brothers and sisters, Nescafe Gold Blend. Genoa defeated Parma 1-0 with a goal from Frendrup. Despite Parma's efforts, Genoa maintained control throughout the match. The only goal came from a massively, massively, massively deflected strike from Frendrup. I have no idea, it's such a bizarre goal, because it hits the defender and it just loops so high up. It was a bizarre goal, but to get a scrappy goal like that and to win a game when you don't deserve it, in inverted commas, is huge. As we always say, it's more impressive than a win you deserve, obviously. Parma struggled to break down Genoa's defense. They were very, very organized. And the match ended with a narrow but deserved victory for the hosts. It's another win for Vieira. This time it came in front of the new Romanian majority shareholder, Sucu, Suciu, Susu. However you say it, it's S-U-C-U. They had one narrow loss against Napoli. They had three wins and four draws, and they're up to 11th, 1 point behind Roma, who they play next. Ooh, what a game, what a league. Amazing stuff, though. Parma continue to be super inconsistent, and they remind me a bit of Sassuolo, not because they beat the big teams and they lose to the small ones, but it's just interesting how they perform against certain teams and then against others, because they could be devastating going forward, and then in a game like this they really don't show you much. But anyway, well-deserved win for Vieira's men once again. And actually, let me talk about it, because I was against the appointment of Vieira. Most people would have been against the appointment of Vieira, because Genoa were obviously struggling after they let go so many fantastic players. Gudmundsson and Retegi. I mean, Retegi is the top scorer. Gudmundsson has his problems, and he's struggling at the moment. But of course, incredibly, incredibly talented player. They lost Dragosin as well. And then, I mean, Messias' injury. Malinovsky's devastating injury. Miretti wasn't hitting it off. Vitinha was struggling. And I mean, of course, the responsibility to a certain degree goes down to the manager, because he's not getting the best out of his players. But I believed that because Gilardino's such a talented manager, that he'll be able to take them out of this hole that they found themselves in. I feel like they were quick to pull the trigger and get rid of him, man. I'm going to be honest. But you can't criticize the move when the new manager is bringing in such positive results. Do I think if I had a top team, who would I appoint as manager between Vieira and Gilardino? Honestly, as a Milan fan, if I had to choose between one of them, and it's with no romanticism towards Gilardino because he's an absolute ledge, I'd go for Gilardino. He's way more technical, he's way more versatile. But with this team, Vieira has something, man. He's added the simplicity to Genoa, this more, bro, just defend when you need to defend, attack when you need to attack. We're going 4-3-3 or 4-2-3-1, just simple, straightforward, and it's bloody working. clearly he's somewhat of a motivator as well. I mean, we remember him as a footballer. How can he not be motivating? It's like saying Roy Keane or Gattuso wouldn't be motivating. And Roy Keane and Gattuso, with the feet of I don't know, not Verratti-like, but he was great with the ball at his feet as well, more than the other two players that I mentioned. So good work, Vieira, if you're listening to this, bro. Fantastic stuff. And Gilardino, I'm sure his time will come. Next season, we'll see him managing in Serie A. Maybe this season, because some people are due to sack their manager, I think. After Inter landed back in Italy, after their devastating loss in Saudi Arabia, they're like, thank God we're playing Venezia. And thank God indeed, because they managed to get 3 points that they needed after picking up many injuries. I mean, Thuram didn't start this game because he was injured. He's back now. He's back and not passing. Hakan is injured. Mkhitaryan is injured. And for some reason, Frattesi isn't playing. Aslan is playing in Çalhanoğlu's role because, to be fair, he's the only one that fits it. And he's getting shafted by the supporters, man. Aslan is having such a tough time over there. And, like, even you see him at the end of the game, he runs into the tunnel. He doesn't want to embrace the atmosphere and whatever, because it's not a nice atmosphere. But they managed to get a 1-0 victory over here. They dominated possession, but there was something fucking missing. Clearly, they're three players. I mean, now Pavard is back from injury, and De Vrij struggled a little bit in these past two games. Otherwise, he's been really good this season. Venezia had a chance to equalize at the end through Poyanpalo, who missed a sitter, man. He has that Poyanpalo. He has a few misses in him. He's a prolific goal scorer in Serie B. I'm so glad we're getting to see him in Serie A again after his brief stint there. But really, really poor miss at the end after Buzio hit the post. So, yeah, huge sequence of events over there for Venezia. Late on in the game, they could have legitimately gotten back in. To be fair to Inter, their loaned out goalkeeper Stankovic was amazing. Again, amazing saves. Just he's so calm. He's so calm. He's so present. He makes the right decisions. Cat-like reflexes. Owns his box well, way beyond his years, man. And let me tell you what, he's the next number one for Inter. I think after summer, either retires or leaves or whatever, they should give Stankovic a punt. They should give him a chance. It's good that they're loaning him out so that he's not rotting on their bench or just playing Coppa or something. I think also Inter don't really rotate keepers after what Radu did to them that 1 year. Opportune time to have a sip of coffee. But yeah, Stankovic, incredible. We'll see him starting for Inter soon in the future unless they sell him for a profit. Roma salvaged a point in a dramatic 2-2 draw against Bologna. What a fucking game. Bologna took the lead twice. First through a goal from Dallinga, and then from a penalty by Ferguson. That's his first goal back after his injury. Roma responded each time, equalizing with goals in the second half. The match saw Roma under pressure, but they managed to come back in the dying moments, salvaging a draw to keep their position in the league. It was a Dovbyk penalty. So Ferguson scored a penalty after a handball in the box. And then there was another handball in the box by a Bologna player. I believe it was... Lukumi? I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, it was a late penalty by Dovbyk. He showed a really cool head. It was the last kick of the game. Bologna, man. I mean, they were the sleeper pick in Serie A. I mean, obviously, they lost a star manager and they lost star players. Salemakers scored against them in this game. He didn't celebrate, good man. But they lost Zirkzee, they lost Calafiore, they know Motta, this isn't new to anyone. But they haven't lost their spark going forward, man. And that is what Italiano brings to a team, right? Of course, sometimes when they're not on, they struggle for creativity. But he's certainly got the players here at Bologna to score goals. They leak goals a little bit, at least in the last two games, obviously. A 2-2 draw over here and then the 2-2 draw against Inter in match day 19. But really good, two very, very entertaining games that we saw Bologna partake in. Roma, again, just getting back into the rhythm, getting back, like for them, it's good that they responded twice, considering that probably earlier on in the season under both their previous managers, maybe they wouldn't have, as they weren't. But they managed to get back, considering the situation. Roma would be happy with the point over here, of course, with a goal with the last kick of the game. Who wouldn't be? We'll wait and see what these two teams can do later on. Napoli beat Verona 2-0 at the Maradona Stadium, claiming their fifth consecutive win. Di Lorenzo forced Montepone to an own goal early on, and then Anguissa sealed the victory with a goal in the second half. Despite Verona's attempts, including a few chances from Tengstedt and Castanos, Napoli dominated the match. What can I say about Napoli-Verona? I mean, this is what you get when Napoli play one game a week. They looked great in this game. And they looked great without Kvaratskhelia. Of course, we'll talk about Kvaratskhelia later on as well. But Neres is the shit, man. Neres is very, very fucking good. And I don't think they felt the absence of Kvara here, because he was absent due to the ongoing back and forth that he was having with the club. But what did we see from Napoli? Great attacking football, great defense. I mean, they've only conceded 12 goals this season. Set piece routines, innovative with their set piece routines. Of course, you'd say they didn't face the toughest opponents in Verona, but in match day one, what happened? Verona beat them 3-0. Of course, that was years ago, to be fair. But, big win for Napoli. Every win for Napoli, don't get it twisted, every win for Napoli from here on out is a fucking huge win. Because they have, how many games are left? 20 games were played, so there's 18 games left. They have 18 finals left. So every single game is detrimental, especially now as they lose one of their key players, Kvicha Kvaratskhelia. But to end match day 20, Monza won 2-1 against Fiorentina. That is their second win this season, and the first win of Bocchetti in Serie A. And it happened, funnily enough, against Fiorentina, because football does that. Of course, I'm saying that because Palladino, the former manager of Monza, lost with Fiorentina in this game. Churia scored the opener. As I said, he hadn't scored a single goal last season, and the season before that he was insane, and he scored a bunch of goals and he assisted a bunch of times. Maldini got a very well needed goal, taking on a volley very, very well and cleanly. And then Beltran managed to score from the spot after winning the penalty himself. Bocchetti's first ever Serie A victory. Are we gonna see what everyone was talking about? Because Bocchetti is clearly, he was highly sought after. And now we're seeing why. Can he stay consistent? Are we going to see more wins? For Monza, it was crucial, that statement by Galliani, as he absolutely motivated everyone. If you don't think we can do it, then leave. I only want people who believe. He clearly believes. Now, what's happening at Fiorentina? Fiorentina are going through a terrible spell where you get to see the shortcomings of the mercato that they had. Now, I mean, they signed Moise Kean, who's one of the top scorers this season. They signed Goodmanson, who hasn't fucking done shit yet. And he's been ass, Goodmanson. Not only has he not been good, he's been ass. He missed a chance in this game that perhaps I would have scored. But they brought in players, Cataldi, Cesale, that were rejects elsewhere, Gosens to a certain degree. And with a talented manager, they were making it work. And they were all on high form. They were on a long winning streak as well. But form, it comes and goes. How sustainable is that method that you sign, I mean, fringe players from elsewhere and you try and make it work? We've seen it. It's money ball at the end of the day. You get a good deal on players with a higher potential than what they're currently showing. But it's interesting with Fiorentina. They were definitely overperforming, man. They were overperforming earlier on. That's not their place yet. The top four is not their place yet. But slowly, slowly, they'll get there. They're definitely a team that will compete for the Europa League. I'm not counting them off because they lost to last place Monza, even though it's quite embarrassing. But we'll see what's to come of Fiorentina. Let's hop on to match day 19. The three matches that took place were obviously Milan against Como, Atalanta against Juve, and Inter against Bologna. Why did these games happen? Why did these match day 19 games happen after match day 20? Because Milan, Atalanta, Juve, and Inter, obviously they took part in the Italian Super Cup, which took place in Saudi Arabia, so naturally they needed to skip those games in match day 19. In fact, we had a short weekend of football over there. But let's start with Milan Como. Milan came back from behind, they were losing 1-0 as new boy Diaw, that's his name, gave Como the lead in the 60th minute. Now, typically when a team scores the first goal in the 60th minute, you think they have a high chance of winning the game, as of course Como did have a high chance of winning that game. But he has become the youngest foreign goal scorer for Como ever in history, and that was on his debut. They signed him, he's a young Spanish gentleman, he plays on the wing. They signed him from Real Betis. We'll go through his profile a little bit later on in the transfer segment that we'll be doing. But Theo equalized through an awkward finish that seemed to take ages to cross the line and hit the side netting. It was a volley which he seemed to accidentally strike with the outside of his boot as it looped over the goalkeeper. That was his 30th goal for Milan. He previously had 29 tied with Paolo Maldini. Abraham would then go on to play Leao through beautifully. It was a Fofana-esque assist for Leao, who dinked it over Boutez with his trademark smile on his face. Theo and Leao on the score sheet. Milan are potentially healing. Now this is right after a disappointing draw against Cagliari. Disappointing draw, I mean, Milan weren't exactly terrible against Cagliari. They struggled to score goals, and then Maignan let in a very easy strike. It was disappointing after what Conceição was able to do in the Super Cup, and then we see his first game in Italy, and we're like, shit, is this going to be another Fonseca situation where you beat the top teams and then lose against bloody anyone that goes man for man? But I don't think that's the case. Milan, once again, the only games that they win at the moment are when they come back from behind. And that's the third game. The third win for Conceição, again, coming back from behind. If that's what it takes, then that's what it fucking takes, man. Milan looked ass in the first half. Lack of creativity, lack of threat, lack of passages of play. Monza very organized again, Como very organized again, a tough nut to crack, this Fabregas side. But Milan got going. The one thing we can't deny is that Milan have Grinta now. Milan are now playing for a manager that they respect. And a good manager makes them play for the shirt, man. And I think that's what we're starting to see in Milan. And it's probably why we're starting to see players renewing their contracts and they want to stay on for Milan. One thing to mention is that Pulisic actually came off injured in this game. He seemed to be either his calf or his hamstring. I couldn't quite notice, but he's fine because Men in Blazers posted and said he's fine. Thank you, Men in Blazers. But yes, so one of Milan's game in hands at least went their way. And then there was Atalanta-Juve that finished 1-1, obviously. But what a fucking game this was, man. Cope Miner started up front, a role which he has been struggling in. And in this particular occasion, I mean, he's in Bergamo against Atalanta fans that literally had a banner that said, "Cope Miners, fuck off." Hilarious. Amazing. But every time he was anywhere near the ball, the jeers were insane. I mean, if you're at any club in Italy and you force your way out and go to Juve, you are beyond dead to them. You're dead, you're in hell, and you're hanging upside down, being eaten by sharks. I don't know. What's worse than that? Kalulu put Juve ahead in the 54th minute, giving us flashbacks. Nice, as a note Jake wrote, and I couldn't agree more. Giving us flashbacks of Calafiori under Motta. Juve went on to do what they have done all season after taking the lead, easing off the pressure. Retegi marked his return from injury by heading home Bellanova's cross over Di Gregorio. A very exciting game. Karnesecki cleared the ball off the line after it had hit the crossbar and was creeping in. Juve are now on 13 draws and still no losses. Again, I just want to say, what a goal by Retegi. Genuinely, that header is not easy. Just to go back to the point Jake made, Kalulu is absolutely fitting the mold of what Calafiori was, and he's the only one that has made it work. They don't quite have Azerxi yet. Obviously, now hopefully the signing of Kolomouani, who's quite a similar profile, would help them over there. Obviously, needs to adapt to the league. He's on a dry loan, so I don't know how much that's going to help. Hopefully, it does. And they don't quite have a Freuler yet because Locatelli has his limitations, even though he's been better. Cope Miners is in that role. Douglas Luiz hasn't hit it off yet. In fact, Juve had a very slow start to this game, and so did Atalanta. The first half was really, really cagey, but the second half looked like a final, man. It was amazing. By the way, these are the two teams, the two losers of the Super Cup going head-to-head, so maybe there was some kind of competitive edge over there. But again, same problem for Juve, where they get one, but they just don't have that killer instinct to win a game. Of course, we've spoken about the lack of experience in the team before. In this game in particular, Motta wasn't on the pitch because he got sent off in the previous game, which that's a point to make, man. Motta's feeling the pressure now. I mean, he was probably taking the Juve job. It always comes with pressure because they've won 9 Scudetti in a row. I mean, it's of course going to come with pressure. They're one of the most historic teams in Italy, them and Milan. He's feeling the pressure. He got sent off in the last game in a scrap with Vanoli. It was absolutely hilarious. And even you just see him, he was in the game in the stands. And then of course, he didn't look at ease. Now your team play Atalanta, you're not going to be at ease. But it's starting to show. And what I'm hoping for is that it won't reflect on the decisions he makes with the squad. Now Juve have an opportunity in January. They're getting this Portuguese right back, which we'll talk about later, along with Kolomouani. And hopefully, now they'll get their hands on a centre back, because they're making another mistake, in my opinion, Juve, in letting Danilo, they want to let Danilo go on a free. They want to terminate his contract and ship him off to Napoli. He hasn't been great, but he had the armband last year. He's deployable. He's having a shit run of form. You know, he's not a terrible player. He's costed Juve points this season. It's true. He's made devastating errors. But you have... There were times where Juve had 5 outfield players on the bench. Why are you terminating contracts? Is now the time to clear up the books? All they want to do is clear up the books. They're letting everyone go. It's like they're only playing once a week. Not even Napoli would have this behavior. They're bringing in Danilo, not letting people go willy-nilly. But that seems to be the theme for Juve. A very, very thin squad, devastated with injuries, and it still seems like there are these decisions being made. Again, good signing for the right back. We need to see how he performs. Good signing of Kolomouani. Shouldn't end there. They need to sign a few more players, especially with City apparently looking at Cambiaso, and they've apparently entered negotiations. More of that to come. Inter hosted Bologna. I mean, Inter, if they have a game in hand and it's against Bologna, I mean, they have nightmares about that. We'll remember that one time where Inter handed the Scudetto to Milan when they had a game in hand against Bologna. This was COVID time, lest we forget COVID time, man. Where Inter had made the trip to Bologna, but Bologna were in quarantine. They couldn't leave. So Juve just had to go back. The game was cancelled. It was going to be counted as a walkover, 3-0 victory for Inter. But obviously it wasn't. It would have been quite unfair in that case. The law was the law. And they had to wait 100 days to play Bologna. They played them and their substitute goalkeeper, Radu, made a devastating error and they handed the league to Milan. This time they didn't have to wait 100 games. They had to wait 10, but it still didn't go to plan for them. Bologna took the lead through Castro, 19 minutes in, who's of course been linked to a move. They're calling him Lauturito because he's so similar to Lautaro. He said he admires Lautaro. It's funny, I said this before we ever heard that he's similar to Lautaro or that he's linked to them or whatever. I'm like, if they ever get rid of Lautaro, Castro would make sense. It's sometimes football is so simple, right? You just have to use your eyes. Dumfries went on to equalize in the 19th minute. Dumfries is on fire right now after Jake called him the shittest right back in a champion in a Serie A winning team ever. Allah. And then Lautaro gave Inter the advantage in added time in the first half. Bologna upped the pressure in the second half and found a 64th minute equalizer through Emil Holm. I'm so glad. He's no goal scorer, Holm. I think this is his third or fourth goal in Serie A. But I'm so glad he's been playing and I'm so glad that he has a goal because he is a train, bro. I love Emil Holm. And he's in the right place with Bologna, an attacking side with wing backs that bomb forward as well, like Lico Giannis on the other side. Really good, and he scored a really good goal as well. And he gridded. You have to love a gritty. He didn't strike me as a guy that hits the gritty, but he hit the gritty. Respect. You have to respect that. Once again, Aslani really struggled in the absence of Çalhanoğlu, while Zielinski gave us flashes of the Zielinski we knew at Napoli. Absolutely, bro. He looked good, Zielinski, carrying the ball forward. Those little touches that he makes, the change of direction. He's a nifty, nifty footballer. Again, just super shocking to me that Fratesi doesn't make the team. It's not that shocking, right? They brought in Zielinski literally to compete with Çalhanoğlu and Fratesi to compete with Barella. But he's not anywhere near the discussion of the starting 11, which would absolutely suck. And it's obviously he's going to want a move away in that case. But I believe the biggest void that Inter have in this team is Hakan Çalhanoğlu. He's almost... There are some players in Inter's team that are irreplaceable, man. And I think Çalhanoğlu is one of them. Because Inter have a very unique set of players, which means that the players they have on the bench can't replicate what the starting 11 does. Because they're not as unique as them. Name another player like Mkhitaryan, you know? Name another player like Çalhanoğlu. Name another player like Barella. Name another player like DiMarco, like Lautaro. They have such unique footballers. Even like fucking Bastoni, so unique. That it's really hard for them to make a substitution and remain strong. Now, what would a great manager do? A great manager would play to the strength of his players. I guess, is there a way that Inzaghi could say, listen, when Zielinski's on the pitch, we're going to play this way. When Aslani's on the pitch, we're going to play this way. But it seems like he's attempting this plug and play thing, which simply isn't really working out. It's complicated. Again, Bologna, offensive, threatening. They lose the ball in pivotal areas sometimes, which puts their defense under a lot of pressure. Inter smell blood, which was obviously evident in this game after they got they went 2-1 up just before halftime. But a well-balanced affair, an entertaining affair. What a game. This happened just yesterday. I was watching it at home in an insane game of football. Inter are now 3 points behind Napoli, just 3 points behind Napoli with their game in hand. So their win will obviously put them level on points with Napoli. Let's get to the transfers. Guys, the moment I think you've all been waiting for. What's the biggest news? Oh God, I have to talk about this alone. Kvaratskhelia for 75 to 80 million. He's leaving Napoli in January to join Paris Saint-Germain, who need a striker. I don't know why they're going for a winger. Well, it's because if you don't want something, you give it to Paris Saint-Germain, right? Let me think about this. So, how did this happen? Let's start from there. How did this happen? We haven't seen a move like this since Vlahovic, and it's simply bizarre that you have your top player, your world-class player, leaving in January to go to a different league for 75 to 80 million. So what happened? All the reports, all the other shows I was listening to, the news, so on and so forth, all said the same thing. Kvara was underpaid. And he was. You can't deny that Kvara was underpaid. He was making, I believe, 1.9 million. Now, they signed him from, I believe, Rubin Kazan for a couple of millions. No one knew who the fuck he was. He came in, he was insane, and the combination of him, Stanislav Lobotka, and Victor Osimhen won them their first title since the Maradona era. Huge, historic, whatever. So naturally, he goes up to ADL, as ADL is probably writing his next movie, and he tells him, listen, boss, or his agent probably does this, but whatever. Listen, boss, I was insane this year. Let's talk about my salary, man. Let's see if I can extend, reward me a bit more. You know, I just gave you the league. And De Laurentiis tells him, the ink on the contract hasn't even dried yet. So basically, get off my ass. I'm not going to pay you yet. Prove yourself in the second season. You had a great season. Perhaps fair enough, perhaps a bit harsh, whatever. What happens in the second season? Shit season for Napoli. Osimhen's fighting. He wants a way out. It's a mess for Napoli, and they finish in 10th place. It's the worst title defense in history. We know it was an absolute nightmare for Napoli, and Kvara was a shadow of himself for the majority of the season. So perhaps he wasn't so willing to, and then discuss upping his salary when he, let's say, flopped. If you talk about how good he was in the first season, and the season again, he's nowhere near where he was in that one season. Do I think Kvara is significantly underpaid at Napoli? Yes. Do I think it's the reason he's out? No. Because we did some digging, Jake and I, and we saw that in December there were reports that he had reached an agreement. There was a total agreement that had been reached for a renewal. It happened in Rome in December. The contract details included a salary of 6 million per season for Kvara, including bonuses, and a release clause of 80 million, which serves as a compromise between Napoli's initial request for 100 million and the player's entourage's request for 60 million. The signature was anticipated by the end of December. After numerous meetings and discussions, the agreement had been finalized and Kvara was ready to renew with Napoli until 2029 for 6 million euros a season. So is it the salary? Or is the player, to be honest, this is Jake's opinion. I'm going to tell you what Jake told me. It's like, let our listeners know that he thinks this is absolutely shameful that when your team is top of the league, you have a contract on the table that you walk out in January to go play for Paris Saint-Germain. Now, I'm torn because, of course, I know that there would be some behind the scenes. ADL has burned bridges before with multiple, whenever there's a world-class player at Napoli, it seems like they have a problem with ADL. So I won't say with full confidence that Kvara is totally, completely and utterly in the wrong, but I won't say that Napoli aren't completely and utterly in the wrong, and that ADL isn't completely and utterly in the wrong. But I think if this report is true, and Kvara could have signed the contract last December for 6 million, and he decided, no, I'm leaving next month, then I don't think that's too fair on the club. And let's be honest, Kvicha, yes, you did great things for Napoli, but Napoli did great things for you. They replaced Insigne with you, their captain, their long-serving captain, their country boy. And they brought in you. They gave you a huge opportunity and you took it. Respect. But you get an offer like that to stay at Napoli. And not only don't you take it, but you're like, no, and I'm off right now, today. Now, he could go at 3 a.m. In front of the Maradona statue, the mural, and pay his respects, which is the least he could do in a scenario like this. But it is, Napoli fans would have a bitter taste in their mouths. I heard other pages and other platforms say Napoli fans shouldn't hate Kvicha because of the historic kind of Serie A victory that he got them. But to be honest, I think he should be ashamed of himself, man, come to think of it. I mean, it's quite bloody ridiculous. Now, I know I'm going back and forth on it right now, but literally, I'm not sure how to feel, because I hadn't read about this $6 million contract yet, and I read it yesterday, so it really changed my perspective. Before, I was like, fuck ADL, he burns all his bridges and stuff, but now I have a bit of a different perspective on it. What do you guys think? One key point to also make is, oof, this is a point, when you get a manager like Conte, your players are no longer the stars, you're making your manager the star. It's the Conte effect, it's the Mourinho effect, it's the Guardiola effect. When you get a manager like that, a big personality, it's his system, he's tough to work with because he's stern and this is my way. And I want this player. If you don't give me this player, I'm going to speak out and I'm going to shit on the club, and you're not giving me enough money and this and that. He becomes the star of the team. So it is occasionally hard for a manager like that to work with world-class players. So perhaps there was, it was tough for Gvicha to work in a Conte system that is so restricting. Spalletti told Gvicha, listen, you've got a free role. Play on the wing, play there, press when you need to press, but otherwise, full liberty to do what the fuck you want to do. And then you go into a Conte system, and before that, a Walter Mazzarri system, and all these other systems that they had, a Calzona system. And it's just discombobulating for a player, and he was, of course, playing at a fraction of his potential, because you put him in a really, really restricted system. To be honest, as much as it's a huge loss for Napoli, it is a huge loss. It couldn't have come at a better time for them when it comes to, don't jump on me, when it comes to other players putting in great performances, because Neres has been insane over the past couple of games. He could replace Kvicha, man, down on that left wing. He's been incredible. I mean, even when they're playing Spinazzola there, when it comes to contest system, these players are performing. They're getting an injection of cash, around 80 million. Kvicha's agent must be over the moon, by the way, because that means he's making around 10 million. But what was I going to say? But Conte's system allows for other players to play in that role and to get the best out of the team. They won't be scoring free kicks from long range. They won't have a player that dribbles the entire team and whatever. But this is what Conte does. Young talent with Conte can get ruined because he'll replace you with a 35-year-old Ashley Young or a 32-year-old Victor Moses or a 32-year-old Romelu Lukaku. He gets the players he wants. Who are they going to get to replace him? Garnacho has been linked to them. I really, really like Garnacho. To be honest, I think he's very raw, and I think under Conte can refine him. And Amorim doesn't really play him at United, my friend was telling me, and a fellow patron, Theo. Chiesa is a natural shout. It would be great to revive his career after playing with the under-21s at Liverpool. How ideal is it because of his injury record and his salary? Not completely. I'm not huge on that move for Napoli, to be fair. And there were a few other options as well that they're currently weighing out. But I don't think they need to make any rush decisions. Maybe they get a backup for Neres. But otherwise, I don't think they should be rushed to get another star player. And now I think they have 80 million and there are definitely places they can reinvest in. They need another defender because Buongiorno's injured at the moment. And there are other areas like the goalkeeper, which they can, of course, strengthen as well. So there's a bright side for Napoli, 80 million. They can really strengthen the squad. They have a Conte system that allows them to flourish without world-class players. Of course, it's a hit because he is a world-class player. He's a very talented player. Again, I think that Guevara could have handled this way, way, way better. But I also think De Laurentiis could have made his life a little bit easier by not being so hesitant to offer the contract in the first place. So let's move on to the next one because I'm blabbing now. Frattesi wants out of Inter, and Inter have quoted Roma 45 million. But if any other team's going for him, then the price will be higher. Fratesi would be a good bloody fit in that Roma midfield. It's hard to think exactly where he'd fit, considering that Ranieri's only here till the end of the season. I don't know what manager they'll get in after that, and I don't think they should rush to make this move, because what they first need to do before they start signing players, Roma, is see who their next manager is going to be. What system are they going to play? They can easily make the mistake of buying players that don't fit the system. Now, the good thing about Fratesi is that he's versatile and everyone can use a goal-scoring midfielder. He has grinta like no other, an eye for a goal. He's a hustler. So it'd be a great signing for everyone, but he should definitely be starting at a team, man. It's a shame having a talent like Fratesi. He took a risk himself at joining Inter, but he definitely needs a new start where he could fall in love with the game a little bit more. Because at this point, he's coming in as a jolly and trying to get late goals. That's all he's being used for. He must be dying for every international break to come out, because Spalletti actually plays him. Spalletti actually likes him. Apparently Roma, yes, are interested in Fratesi. Apparently Napoli wouldn't hate the idea, but would Napoli pay 50 million or 45 million or whatever for Fratesi when, you know, it's essentially more than half of the money they just got for Guevara? I don't know. Kolo Muani to Juve has been confirmed, and finally, pardon me, Juve and Motta have a striker that fits the Xerxes mold. It's a dry loan, there's no option. He's been out of sorts at PSG, so I'm surprised there's no kind of option. But let's talk a bit about Kolo Muani for us Serie A heads that perhaps don't watch the French league. I mean, who does? He's a versatile forward, so he can play on the wings as well. He is very technically gifted with the ball at his feet, and he also stands at 6'2", so he's got quite a strong build. He's really good in physical duels. He's this like formidable presence in attack, and he excels as this creative link, like very much like Xerxes. He drops quite deep and he connects play and allows the wingers to go in behind. The fact that he can play on the wings is also a good thing for Juve, considering the injuries they've had over there. He has been struggling, but he has previously, like he had a season where he had 15 goals and 11 assists, which shows that with the right management and with the right team, he can be an absolute threat. He likes charging at defenders. He has a dribbling success rate of 62.5%, which is very, very impressive. And if you come up in a 1v1 against him, let's just say it'll take a very, very talented defender to stop him. He inserts himself defensively in set pieces. His 6'2" figure is very much appreciated in the defensive phase, and he can also adapt himself into various different systems as well. So it's a mix of physicality, technical skill, and tactical awareness, which puts him up with the kind of description of Xerxes. He's definitely a striker that Motta can work with. I'm really excited to see him, because I've only seen him come on for France a few times. I don't know too much about Kolo Muani. This is all research and a few highlight reels here and there. I mean, what do you learn from highlight reels about players? But yeah, definitely an exciting time for Juve, since it's been so flaccid in the season. And they've also gone ahead and gotten a right back. This, of course, comes as they've been playing Savona, a next-gen player who last season was playing in Serie C, who isn't perfect. I mean, he's young. To be fair, he has 2 goals this season as well. He's clearly, he can both defend and attack, but he's not perfect, right? And Inter have signed Alberto Costa for 15 million. He's a Portuguese right back from Vitória SC. It was around 12 million to 13 million. So he's 1.86 meters, so also quite a tall player. He's also strong. And he's very, very athletic. So this is the kind of right back you can expect to bomb up and down, which is, of course, key in a Motta system. And, of course, due to his height, it's not only due to his height, but he also wins a lot of defensive duels and aerial challenges, which, of course, is always a great asset, and especially for set pieces if you want to attack and use him in set pieces. Overlaps are what you can expect. Accurate crosses are what you can expect. It's a good thing. Now they're playing Muani ahead of Vlahovic, so maybe Muani would be a bit outside of the box playing him the ball. Who knows? This season, Costa has demonstrated his attacking capabilities by providing 3 assists and scoring 1 goal in 21 appearances across all competitions. Again, most of his assists actually did come from very accurate crosses. What would his tactical fit at Juve be? With Juve expected to terminate Danilo's contract, Costa's anticipated to compete with Savona for the starting right-back position. His versatility and attacking mindset align with Juve's tactical approach, which often emphasizes fullbacks contributing to both defensive duties and offensive support. His blend of attributes, technical skill, and tactical intelligence, he's definitely a promising addition, to put it shortly. Sorry, I'm trying to keep up with these notes alone. It's quite difficult. But he's young. He can develop at Juve as well. He can learn this area away. I don't think he'll come in and dispossess Savona instantly. I think he needs to get used to the league a little bit. Joining from the Portuguese league is very, very different, right? So it'll take him some time to get used to it. But again, a signing that Juve definitely needed, but I think they do need a centre-back a little bit more as well. This is a fun one. Como have signed French 24-year-old defensive midfielder Caqueret. He from Lyon, and he also featured against Milan. What can I tell you about Caqueret? He's renowned for being good on the ball. He's great at controlling the tempo of a game, so he's essentially the Fabregas mold. He's often compared to someone like Marco Verratti, so press resistant, quick with the ball at his feet, good turn of pace as well. Think of Lobotka, think of Verratti. He has often been, of course, compared to these players. He's great in the build-up phase. He drops really, really deep to receive the ball from centre-backs, and we often see with Como, much like Milan, for example, the defensive midfielder picking up the ball from the goalkeeper, for example. So we'll see a lot of that from him. And he progresses play a lot. He's a very progressive player. He likes to play the ball forward as well. Defensively, it's more about his awareness and positioning, interceptions, and perhaps a few tactical fouls here and there, but he's not like a formidable figure by any means, but more known for his passing creativity and the way that he controls the games. An interesting thing is he featured, there was the, I believe the under 21 or under 18, I can't friggin' remember, let's say under 21, it was the under 21 World Cup or Euros between France and Italy. This is Italy's squad, right? They played a 3-5-2 formation. Listen to this, bro. Karnesecchi in goal. The 3 center backs, Occoli, Pirola, Scalvini. Wing backs, Bellanova and Udogi. 3 central midfielders, Tonali, Rovella and Ricci. The fuck? And the 2 strikers, Cambiaghi and Pellegrini. What a team. What a team. Against the 4-3-3 of France, Chevalier in goal. Back line of Kalulu, Bade, Lukeba and Nkunku. A midfield 3 of Serie A players in Manu Kone, Caqueret and Kefren Turam. And the front line, to be honest, I don't know anyone. Barcola, Kalimuendo and Juiri. Not quite Giroud, but Juiri. But that's just an interesting thing I wanted to read out to you guys. Como have also, so first, a great addition for Como. What a splendid midfield they're going to have. And he seems like a really good tactical fit for Fabregas' system. They have also signed Assan Diaw, the 19-year-old Spanish winger from Betis, the one that scored against Milan. What do we expect from him? Power, pace, He loves to take on a man. He's quite big as well, 1.85 meters in height. He's known for his speed, technical skills, and ability to take on defenders, making him a versatile and dynamic presence on the right flank. He's represented Spain at the under 19 level. He is of Senegalese descent. He's very, very talented. The fact that he scored on his debut against Milan, you know, is absolutely no joke. So hopefully more to come of these two amazing signings for Como. Another fun one. What can I just say? What a gennaio mercato. Who the fuck would have thought these amazing moves would happen in January? Unfortunately, we're losing Vara, but some great, great signings over here. Arion Ibrahimovic to Lazio on loan from Bayern. 10 million to buy him, and then Bayern would have a 25 million buyback that is rumored. You will all remember Arion Ibrahimovic. He's not Ibrahimovic's son. You'll remember him as he was on loan at Frosinone last season, and Jake and I were absolutely raving about Arion Ibrahimovic because he is very, very talented, and he even scored a number of goals. I'll just read this bit that I have on him before I get into what I think of this move by Lazio. He was born in 2005 in Nuremberg. He plays as an attacking midfielder. He began his youth career at Nuremberg before joining Bayern Munich's academy in 2018. Ibrahimovic quickly progressed through Bayern's youth ranks, making his debut for the under-17 team at just 14 years old and later advancing to the under-19 squad. An early bloomer, man. In 2023-2024, he was loaned out to Frosinone in Serie A, where he made 18 appearances, scoring 2 goals and providing 1 assist. Following his loan spell, Bayern Munich extended his contract until 2027 with an option for an additional year. So clearly, Bayern Munich also value this player. Even the fact that they have a buyback for 25 million, if this guy becomes world class, it's amazing that they can just get this guy back for 25 million. And they're no brokies, Bayern Munich. In 2025, he joined Lazio on loan for the remainder of the season. Definitely an opportunity for him to gain regular playing time at a high level, whilst with Bayern Munich sporting director Christopher Freund expressing confidence in his development. He's 1.76 meters in height. He's known for his technical skills, vision, and versatility in attacking midfield roles. What can I say about this move? So, great signing. It's great that they have only the option to get him for 10 million. These buybacks from the big teams, especially like Real Madrid, Bayern Munich, when Italian teams sometimes do business, they have to take this potential L. That 25 million buyback clause sucks, because I really think Ibrahimovic could be a player that you sell for 40, 50 million in the future, maybe more. He's really, really fucking talented. The way he was playing at Frosinone was amazing at such a young age. Great signing. I think there are areas, however, that Lazio are neglecting. And I think those areas are, so they're stacked on the wings. It's true they don't have a direct replacement for Zaccagni on the left. Well, there's Noslin, to be fair. But they've got Isaksson, they've got Pedro, and a bunch more that just aren't coming to mind at the moment. And they went for another winger in Arion Ibrahimovic. I think where Lazio are super thin is in the central midfield role. And we've spoken about this before. Guendouzi, Rovella, and Delebashiru. Otherwise, no one. We've seen Patrick play in the central midfield role in the Europa League. And what happens when Patrick plays in the central midfield role and it's Gigot at the back, then they don't have a substitute centre-back. So I really think they should be investing in a centre-back and a central midfielder. I think it's good that they spotted the opportunity to get a player like Arion Ibrahimovic, but I still think there's a lot of work for Lazio to do, and they should definitely do it now because they're on a shit run of form. One injury to Rovella would be devastating. Man, they don't have another player like Rovella. Delebashiru is more similar to Guendouzi in that sense. And he's way more attacking-minded as well. So, yeah. Definitely a lot of work to do for Lazio and the Mercato. Napoli have signed Philip Billing. Philip Billing. I don't know too much about Philip Billing. However, he is one of just four midfielders to reach double figures for both goals and assists in the 2021-2022 Championship season. We know what the Championship is like. No joke. Very competitive and a tough league to partake in. He was born in 1996 in Copenhagen, Denmark. He's known for his versatility as a midfielder, standing at 1.93 meters. Good combination of physical presence and technical skill. He began his professional journey with Huddersfield Town, and he made significant contributions during their time in the Premier League. He played for Bournemouth. In 2019, he moved to Bournemouth, where he became a key figure in their midfield. And now he's moved on loan to Napoli, and they have the option to make it permanent for $9 million. The strategic acquisition by Napoli aims to bolster their midfield as they contend for the title under head coach Antonio Conte. He's known to be a box-to-box midfielder. Obviously, box-to-box naturally combining defensive duties with attacking duties. But he can clearly get a goal as well. So, a bit of a McTominay in that sense. Is he a direct vice for McTominay? I think that's exactly what Napoli are going for. I think they saw how effective McTominay has been and what an addition he has been. An injury would really harm Napoli. So, perhaps they went out and got themselves a vice for him in Billing. Definitely interested to see what he brings to the table. Udinese have signed Sole, a gentleman named Umar Sole. He is a French centre-back. They got him after free agency from Salzburg. He's a 24-year-old French centre-back. In his early career, he developed through the Laval Academy, and he made his professional debut on August 4th, 2017 in a 1-0 victory against US Concarneau. He joined Lyon in 2018 on loan, with the move becoming permanent later on that year, so he definitely impressed at Lyon. In July 2020, he was transferred to RB Salzburg, where he continued to develop. But then he ended up being a free agent. So something happened over there. They terminated his contract. He mutually terminated his contract with Salzburg in September of 2024. And he signed a pre-contract with Udinese, officially joining the club on January 1st, 2025. So, yep, good signing for Udinese. Another tall figure, funnily enough, for a tall side in Udinese. We move on to Genoa, who have signed Sebastian Ottawa from Aalborg for 2.75 million. He is a Danish centre-back, 20 years old, standing at 6'5". He is a direct replacement for Voliakko, who has left to join Parma. As Parma sign Voliakko and they sell Koulibaly, their right-back Woyo Koulibaly, to Leicester. So a lot of movement going on over there. Napoli and Cagliari have also done business in their swap with Caprile and Scuffè. And of course, Lefay has also been loaned out to Sunderland from Roma. Yes, I think a move that's definitely going under the radar is Folorunshaw's move to Fiorentina. He's on loan with an option to buy. He was excellent, Folorunshaw, in that season, in a couple of seasons, I think, at Verona. He scored some bangers. He loves dragging the ball forward, beating his man and going for goals. He's a goal-scoring midfielder. And I think Conte really slept on him. I think there was a bit of a feud going on over there. But a great signing for Fiorentina. Really, really under the radar. They have the option to make it permanent. So I think it's definitely a good move over there. There are some rumors, and I would like to address those a little bit as well. There's the rumor of Walker or Rashford to Milan. Milan can only sign one. I think there's only one right answer really here, because Milan need either a right back or a striker. Rashford isn't a striker. Rashford is a left winger. Mourinho said this. All his coaches said this. I've seen Rashford play as a striker, and I don't like Rashford as a striker. So are you going to get someone on the wages of Marcus Rashford to be a vice Leao. He's not going to start ahead of Leao. He'll be a vice Leao. So I'm not a huge fan of that move for Milan. Much rather Milan get Walker. Now he's 34 years old. Let's be real, he's a bit of a twat as well, Walker. But he's a champion, right? He struggled a little bit this season. I've actually been posts made about how City are better off without Walker. But in the right back position, with Calabria on his way out at the end of the season, and Emerson Royal being Emerson Royal, I think Walker would definitely be the way to go. Now, I think that's what Milan do, right? They either get young and they develop, or they get old and they get what they can from players like that. They did that with Zlatan, Giroud, so on and so forth, Kier. So I think Walker would definitely be the wiser. If they have to sign one of them, they should definitely go for Walker. It looked like it was going to be Rashford, because Okafor looked like he was joining Leipzig. He caught the flight and everything. Man, he went to his medical. They didn't see an injury in him, but they saw that he was out of shape and they sent him back to Milan. How embarrassing is that, both for Okafor and for Milan? How can you be a footballer at Milan and be out of shape? He was competing with Fonseca. He had the opportunity to displace Leao. He was displacing Leao. And he's out of shape. What the fuck happened over there, man? He's back at Milan now. Whoopty fucking do. We have a left winger that's out of shape, essentially. But he's back now. So Milan don't have to sign Rashford. So, to be honest, I'm not too sure. For me, if Milan had to make a signing in January, they should get themselves a right back, maybe a vice Theo, so maybe a versatile wing back in that sense. They probably definitely need a vice Theo as well. And perhaps a striker, because Morata is great with the link-up play, but he's never in the box. Well, scores a few poacher goals here and there, but he's not reliable. He's not always at the right place at the right time. Tammy, he's there, and he's also good at the link-up play, but he can't fucking score, man. The misses that he makes are just, they hurt. They hurt. It's really lame, to be honest, how he can't hit the back of the net. So yeah, definitely those areas are where Milan need to focus on. As I mentioned earlier, Werner, Garnacho and Chiesa have been rumoured to Napoli. Lazio are now looking at Fazzini once again. There was a point where Empoli said no to their like 10 million offer, and Lazio started looking at Ligue 1 for some young talent. But now they've revived their efforts for Fazzini, and this came after they signed Arjan Ibrahimovic. So, are they again looking at the wrong area? He's an attacking midfielder. They need a central midfielder. They need a central midfielder badly, and they need a center back badly. So, a little bit weird. But again, always good to invest in young talent. And also, Manchester City have apparently entered negotiations with Juventus for Cambiaso. It's very early to see whether or not to take this seriously, but I don't blame them, because Cambiaso's a fantastic player. He's been a bit off in the last few games, but he's world-class. He's phenomenal that he's so young. It's ridiculous how you could be so young, so versatile, so mature. Of course, he's made some immature decisions recently, but again, you can't take anything away from him. He is a world class talent. Okay, so that's the episode from my end, guys. I know it didn't flow as much as it does when it's me and Jake. Obviously, that's, you know, I'd be speaking to my brother over there, so it's a lot easier for me to do over here. I had to focus on a lot of things at once. It's the first time I did it alone, but I hope I didn't bore you to death. But yeah, I'll see you guys next week with Jake. Hopefully his head cold will be better. I'm hoping so, because this is something, okay, bros and gals. I got this board game from my friend Adam Ryan for Secret Santa, my friend and colleague Adam Ryan at Free Hour. He got me this board game called Super Club. It's a football manager board game. Apparently they're not making them anymore. The company liquidated. I don't know how the fuck they liquidated, because what a fucking game. If you're ever out at a store or something and you see Super Club, the game, buy it, get your three best friends, football nerds like, and play, man. The girls are playing it with us because you don't need any football knowledge. It's a board game, you know what I mean? Having some football know-how, whether to prioritize upgrading the trainer facility, are you gonna buy this player, are you gonna develop that player, kind of thing. Ah, it's so sick. And Saturday we have plans to play all day while there's top Serie A matches. There's Milan, Juve, there's, I believe, Atalanta, Napoli. Huge stuff. But thanks again, guys. I love you all. Thank you for tuning in, and I'll see you all next week.
If you like Serie A or have ever liked it in the past, it's a good opportunity for you to listen once a week and you'll get filled in.
The football weekend, that's like the main dish. But then a few days later, you drop your episode and that's like the dessert. And the dessert is just perfect.
It's good, the cake.
It makes it feel like we're all sitting in a room together, just BSing with each other.
The atmosphere is fantastic.
I promise nobody will ask you to send boob pics.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
I love how you go into so much detail and show so much passion towards each and every team. Literally, no team is left undiscussed.
When I listen to you, it's like I'm talking to you in a pub. It's like I'm chatting to a friend and you're chatting to me.